Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Faith leaders across the country have called for a national day of mourning today to mark the death of more than 100,000 people in the United States to COVID-19. So far, President Trump mandated flags be flown at half-staff to memorialize the dead, but he has not suggested any kind of official grieving or day of remembrance. For many people in the United States, the absence of at least a moment to collectively mark the grief felt across the country or the leadership to acknowledge it weighs heavy. So we asked you if there should be a national memorial or day of mourning for the people who have died of COVID-19 or other ways that we can honor those we've lost.
Absolutely, there must be a national day of mourning for COVID-19 victims. This has been a national tragedy, and frankly, there hasn't been any mourning on an official level. It seems no one much acknowledges the tremendous loss. One day to acknowledge what has happened would, I think, be healing for everyone, and especially for all those people out there who've lost loved ones and been denied much opportunity to mark this calamity in their lives. Alita Hancock, Pasadena, California.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm calling from Worcester, Massachusetts, but it's too soon for us to go ahead and do that because it would be the same idea as having a day of mourning in the middle of a war. You know, we're not to the end of it yet. So there will be a day when a day of mourning will be appropriate, but right now is too soon.
I think that each state should have a memorial at the Capitol with the names and the photos of each person from the pandemic. I just think that would be a nice way to memorialize them.
This is Tom Hoffman. I'm calling you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And yes, I think there should be a memorial day or some kind of remembrance for the people that died. And I believe that Joe Biden should sort of take this up as a cause as part of the election, because no way Trump's going to do it.
Hi, my name is Mary Ann. I'm calling from Macomb, Michigan. I believe that there should be a national memorial for COVID victims, just like there was for 9/11 or Oklahoma City. The problem is these people died all across the country. So where do we place a memorial? When do we decide that this crisis is over, and how do we honor those who died? Do they need to have a proven cause of death to be COVID, or can it be related to COVID, or can it be suspected COVID because not everybody got a test? How do we recognize each individual on a wall, in a book, or can we do something like a tree with permanent leaves on it where everybody who died's name was etched or embroidered or engraved on a leaf? However it's done, there does need to be a place where people can go to grieve, remember, and start to heal, since all that was taken from them during the pandemic and the lack of or rushed funeral process and no human connection.
This is Jeannie from Beaufort, South Carolina. I think that the best way to honor the folks who have passed from COVID-19 would be to do what we're supposed to do to slow the spread and stop the infection.
Hi, my name is Brent, calling from Oklahoma City. I'm calling to say that the best way to honor those that we've lost for COVID-19 is to tear down the institutions that failed to protect them and ensure that they would have proper health care.
Colin Dickey is a writer and the author of Ghostland and the Unidentified, and he recently wrote about the lack of national mourning over COVID-19 victims for the Medium publication Gen. In his piece, he talks about, quote, the trend away from mourning toward revenge. Colin, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So why do you think collective mourning has largely been absent in the United States so far in this moment? I mean, we're at 104,000 Americans last time I checked.
Right. I think there are two different things happening. I think you have the singular failure of the Trump administration, which is unique to the current president's own self-interest and kind of incapacity to feel empathy for others. But I think you have a larger, longer history that has been going on in this country for the past 20 years. I think in some sense, ever since 9/11, which was the last time we had what you could say is a sort of communal national outpouring of grief over a national tragedy. And we have been moving more or less away from that. And in the piece, I talked about the difference between 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. With 9/11, it was possible to channel that grief into some kind of political action, namely the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. With Hurricane Katrina, the villains were less obvious, and in some cases they were the federal and state officials who failed to prepare for the catastrophe. And that kind of grief was more likely going to be turned back against politicians. And so politicians found it was better and simpler to simply deny that grief altogether.
COVID-19 and the coronavirus has affected Black and Latino communities disproportionately here in this country. But at the same time, we're looking at 104,000, if not more, Americans of all races and backgrounds and ages. How important is it to have a dedicated day to mourn this many American lives?
I think it's hugely important. I think that we have not even begun to scratch the surface of what the psychological and emotional impact of a death count at this scale is going to do to this country. I mean, obviously, individual families have gone through, you know, immense pain, but they have also, in many ways, been prevented from some of the normal rituals that we associate, you know, not being able to gather, not being able to hug their loved ones, not being able to hold funerals. That is going to compound the trauma and that latent grief because it's lacked the traditional modes of expression. And I think what we're going to find as we go forward is that that need can only be suppressed and repressed for so long. And I really do think that it's incumbent upon us as a community to think about how we go about finding some way to collectivize this grief so we can make some kind of larger meaning out of the suffering for the benefit of all of us.
The President of the United States so far has not declared a formal National Day of Mourning. Leadership in many parts of the country have not formalized mourning for coronavirus and COVID-19 victims. The media, however, has tried to, in some ways, fill the gap. I'm wondering your thoughts on that. Do we need a formalized, from the top down, this day we will, you know, pause to remember?
You know, I think it's not exactly clear what the means is ultimately going to be. And I think a good analogy to think about is the AIDS quilt. You know, the idea of a quilt representing, you know, a memorial was not something that existed prior to, you know, the AIDS crisis, but it became a kind of testament in a unique and unexpected way. And I think that both media and the population, we're going to be, in some sense, sort of experimenting until we find that thing that conveys something significant and specific to the crisis that we're going through. And I don't exactly know what it looks like. And I don't know that any of us will know what it looks like until it appears. And I think at that point, we're going to seize on it and sort of say, yes, this is what gives us a sense of solace during this time.
It's something that I think a lot of Americans are looking for, is solace. Colin Dickey is a writer and author of Ghostland and The Unidentified. Colin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
And we're going to continue our conversation on mourning and how we memorialize victims on a mass scale in the United States, like those who have died of COVID-19. And I want to bring in two more people to the conversation now. Mickey Maclier is a professor of history at the University of Connecticut and the author of The Politics of Mourning, Death and Honor in Arlington National Cemetery. Mickey, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Reverend Jen Bailey is a founder and executive director of Faith Matters Network and the associate minister at Greater Bethel AME Church in Nashville. Reverend, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Reverend, let's start with you. One of the big questions here is, what is the importance of marking milestones like the one we've just reached of more than 104,000 people dead?
That's a great question. And I think one of the things that has been top of mind for me as a religious leader is the ways in which mourning, and in particular, memorializing mourning, has been absent in our public narrative over the past several weeks, whether it be marking over 100,000 people who've died from COVID-19, or even, as we've seen this past weekend, the uprisings in many cities across the United States. I believe both are expressions and outpourings of grief. It is not ironic to me that COVID-19 is a respiratory disease that seeks to steal our breath, and that George Floyd's last words were, "I can't breathe." And so as we think about what it means for people to be able to create spaces to let out the grief that they have been feeling, whether that grief be immediate because they have lost a loved one to this insidious disease, or generational, as we think about the state of race relations in this country, in the absence of public space and collective space to name that pain, I think we tend to orient towards a space of conflict, right? And so I am really moved by the work that I've been seeing happen in the absence of national leadership with local leaders. About a week and a half ago, I participated as a volunteer in a gathering called Naming the Loss, where for 24 hours, volunteers from across the country just named the names of those who had passed away from COVID-19. And it's striking to me that those spaces had to be organized by local volunteers because there was no public space being held for folks to express their grief and pain. And what struck me is that over 500,000 people tuned into that Facebook live stream over that 24 hours. And so people were searching for a way to connect with the pain that they were feeling.
And Mickey, I want to bring you in here because this is something that our previous guest actually talked about, use the example of the AIDS quilt, for example. For those who don't remember, this very large communal quilt that was stitched together in memorial of those people who had died from AIDS and HIV. Mickey, historically, how have we memorialized national losses when they aren't tied to a political event such as 9/11?
You know, I think thinking about the AIDS quilt is a really important way to get into this conversation, because that was also a reaction to the absence of a public dialogue and a public collective mourning that honored all of the lost and honored all of the lost as a part of the national fabric and as valuable citizens and valuable residents and people in the country. And so it looks different from other memorials. It looks different from other moments of national mourning because it was also a part of a different activist fundamental speaking back to that kind of absence. And I believe we'll see something like that around our losses from COVID-19. But I also think we need to draw a distinction between memorials and memorial building and national mourning and the things that we need to do right now, like the events that Reverend Bailey was discussing.
So how do we make that distinction, Mickey, right now? I mean, is there an importance, if we had to pick what was the moment, the timing for something right now, is it a national memorial that we should be setting up, or is it some more of is there a need for a recognition of sorts?
I think we need a recognition. I think we need multiple national moments of silence. I mean, we've already sailed past the horrific 100,000 mark, and we're going to see more deaths, and we should be marking them as we also continue to struggle with this crisis, because the less we honor the dead and mark our losses, the more people are going to needlessly die. Those things are connected. This is also a public health concern.
Reverend Bailey, you mentioned the hundreds of thousands of people who tuned in to watch a memorial that was being streamed, and you used the word hunger. What are people hungry for that you're speaking to?
You know, I think we forget, because of the way that our public consciousness around this pandemic moment has evolved, that behind every number is a person, is a story, is a daughter, is a son, is a parent, or an auntie or an uncle, right? That there are stories behind these numbers, that there are people behind these numbers. And I think particularly for those who have lost someone, people are hungry to have their loved ones' names spoken and their stories remembered. We know that memory is often the greatest anecdote to death. And in the absence of a collective memory of this moment, I think people are feeling lost. And to just pick up on something that was just said, you know, part of the reason why it's so important to name this now is because this is an active crisis. It's not something that is disappearing, right? There are still people dying as we speak. And so the importance, I think, of calling people to recognition is also an honoring that this is a pandemic that is still going on.
Reverend Bailey, we've talked a lot about the experience of individual grief and mourning on this show. How is it different from collective mourning? We kind of touched on that in the previous segment.
Sure. You know, I think our individual sense of grief and mourning actually helps activate us towards a posture of collective mourning. I think about the loss of my own mother several years ago and how it opened me up to be able in this moment to provide care for loved ones who have lost their parents to COVID-19. And so I think there's actually a very close relationship between individual grief and our ability and capacity to empathize with those who are also struggling, particularly in this COVID-19 moment. And I think there is a necessary and important part of this conversation that is oriented towards what it means for us to build community out of a moment like this. And that community can only be built and felt through an empathetic lens, through being able to feel with other people into this moment. And we are a country that is not really good at memory. In fact, we tend to shy away from it or tend to avoid remembering, particularly those things that have been painful. And so I think we have a lot to learn from communities of color, from the great faith traditions of our country about what it means to hold collective space for grief and mourning in a way that initiates deeper connection into community rather than the opposite.
And you mentioned, Reverend, that we as a country tend to shy away from things that have been painful. I would add that we also tend to shy away from things that are uncomfortable, and race is one of those things. I think, you know, the way that this has played out among different communities might. I wonder, Mickey, if you might weigh in on whether or not you think that has had something to do with this. I mean, coronavirus and COVID-19 has taken more than 104,000 lives, young lives, older lives, Black, white, Latino, but it really has had a disparate impact on communities of color. Do you think that, Mickey, has anything to do with the lack of a collective memorial right now, at least from the very top?
Unfortunately, I think it has everything to do with that. And I think it not only has to do with a failure in leadership and a refusal to recognize from the top, but it's indicative, as the last week has been an attempt to show us and to show the country and to speak against the kind of forgetting and masking and refusing to acknowledge the value of all lives that is a part of the entire, is a national obligation and a national responsibility. I think it's important in noting the incredible failures of leadership that have happened in this context and others, that this is also a failure that's happening among Americans and among people who aren't in leadership as well. But absolutely. And it is also a moment that reminds us that it is only by truly reckoning with the past and acknowledging the past and present inequalities that we're going to build anything better.
And Mickey, to sort of tease that out a little bit, I mean, how important has leadership been on issues like this historically? Because it feels like, as we talked about with the AIDS quilt, there is a need, there is a hunger that Reverend Bailey mentioned in the previous segment, that people want to see people memorialized. They want to see the names and stories of the people that they've lost acknowledged. So in lieu of that leadership? I mean, have we seen that historically? Have leaders always stepped up to the plate in times like this? And are we just in a particularly large gap right now?
We have a long history of presidents and others stepping in and serving as we've talked about in the public dialogue, mourners in chief, or serving as both comforting figures and representative models for bringing people together. We have a number of comparisons to be made between President Trump and Ronald Reagan and the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, or President Clinton and the Oklahoma City bombing, George W. Bush and 9/11, President Obama and the aftermath of Charleston. But in all of those comparisons, I think we also have to consider the facets that are uneven in their comparisons to our current pandemic and our current politics. And of course, Ronald Reagan also failed to acknowledge HIV/AIDS through most of his administration, while thousands died unrecognized. And that's the comparison we should be making.
Reverend Bailey, given this absence of leadership right now and the hunger that you've been talking about, what would be satisfying to mark this moment? What would an effective and an empathetic memorialization look like, in your opinion?
You know, it strikes me that there are already people who are doing it. So even as we speak about the absence of national leadership on these topics and in this space of collective grief and mourning, there are communities across the United States who are already doing this work. Over the course of this coming weekend, there is a COVID Memorial Weekend scheduled June 6th and 7th, where local organizers are putting together memorials, makeshift memorials to those who passed away in their local communities. And so, you know, I am always struck by the ability of the people in the absence of sort of a larger national discourse to pick up the mantle, particularly led by communities of color, led by religious minorities and others who step into space because it's what they know how to do. It's what they know their communities need. And so I've been really moved by that type of work. I've also been moved by a number of different networks that have emerged in this COVID moment to attend to the health and mental health and spiritual well-being of folks, groups like the COVID Grief Response Network, which is working with 20 and 30-somethings who've lost somebody to COVID. So, you know, it's a tricky balance on the one hand, and I say this as a Black woman, as a woman of color who has disproportionately had folks close to me either impacted by COVID-19 or have, you know, died from COVID-19. I've been struck by the ability of people and the absence of leadership to step in, everyday folks, to fill in that gap in that space. And so on the one hand, I feel like some of that work is being done. It's being attended to. That hunger is being met on a local level. But it's still not as strong as it could be if we had a stronger national response from our leadership.
Jen Bailey is the founder and executive director of Faith Matters Network. And Mickey McElyea is a professor of history at the University of Connecticut. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.